Welcome to Not Sheathed, episode one. What was the title?
I don't remember now.
Oh, it was the peculiar and disturbing.
Right. The perverse and often baffling.
Yes, that'll be our episode title.
Yes. We feel it's a good descriptor of the furry fandom.
Yeah, as G4 can probably attest to now.
They were here for a long time today.
Yeah, they kept shooting over by my table, and I was like terrified they were going to catch me on camera and that would like break their camera.
They were still shooting at like 7 o'clock when we left for dinner.
Oh, gee. I saw Kit tweeted a video. They were all like, they had like a bunch of fursuiters laying on the ground, and then they all stood up at a certain point and started dancing around the.
Apparently,
the host.
They staged some of the Critter Olympics for the host, and like they let her win the game of musical chairs, and she was getting in the face of people, and she was calling the. She was using like, God, what did they tell us the expression was that she used? It was something like,
"Yiff me into Merhole."
No.
Okay.
It was this, the kind of thing when people first come to the furry fandom, and they're like, "Oh, you're all pretending to be animals," and they're like, "Hey,
you should be muzzled. You should have a muzzle."
Oh, yeah, it was something like, "You should be muzzled. I should muzzle you." And we're all like, "I muzzled you in this."
It's like, who talks like that?
And we're just like, yes, animal puns. We've all been there.
Which I guess is a good welcome to, I mean, it's a good intro newbie thing to do.
Yeah.
For the fandom. I was concerned about it because I'm very adverse to the media attention in the community. I like shy away from it almost on an instinctual level, like an animal.
I'm gonna put on my rider hat for a moment here and say you're averse.
Did I say adverse? I'm sorry. No, the adult writing panel was 2 hours ago.
That's not adult. That's just writing.
Okay. But I'd been corrected by a couple people that said that G4 had done fairly middle of the road to positive coverage in the past, so
they,
I don't know.
It was kind of hard to tell from what they were looking at, but they did at one point in front of the table say, "And here's an adult art binder. Let's see what's in here." I didn't look to see if they actually opened it. Did they?
I didn't. I was too busy like eating my own fist, so I couldn't tell.
I told you to put that down and go for the hero instead. It looked much tastier.
Paper is yummy.
Anyway.
As you can tell, this show's about nothing in particular.
Exactly.
So we could probably explain for the listeners at home who aren't here that basically, I'm the only not-caster here. We never said. Live from FWA 2011.
Woo!
Woo! About, like, 5 minutes into the show.
Yeah, well.
Finished the introduction.
That's because it's Gray Muzzle Cast.
We can't remember.
These newfangled media with their cameras coming around our conventions and taking pictures of people.
They'll steal my soul. So, well, back onto the explanation. So I'm the only not caster here, and Kame Hirasaki is not here. So we've done a...
So I'm the only unsheathed member.
The only sheather here.
The only... Right. I'm the only on-air unsheathed... Kit is over. Kit is our microphone runner wolf here. So you will hear him from time to time talking into the mic. He's very excited, by the way, about the fact that he can be an audience member at a podcast.
It doesn't happen very often.
It's very exciting. He doesn't have to monitor the sound levels or nothing like that. So
I'm supposed to be doing that, and I don't know how this works. There's lots of little lights. There's a red one. I think that's good because it means it's recording.
We're using all new equipment provided by Fuzzwolf.
Yeah, I wanted my own podcast equipment.
Which is cool. Now you don't need any of them.
That's right. I can do it on my own. Actually, this is actually for my Who First co-host will be moving locally to me. So, local to me. See, it's late. I can't talk properly. So rather than doing it over Skype with USB mics, we'll do it in person. We'll do it in person for the first time. And this is just easier than...
Cool. Panther won't let you use his setup for your Who First podcast?
I'd just be a pain to go over there. twice a week.
That's true.
Set it up because the
hey
the
guys,
not-cast is
we're
not.
Here to take over your living room for an hour and talk about Doctor Who.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
we're
great.
We're here to bore you.
We're gonna go over and get pizza.
Yeah, because the studio is not permanently set up. They break it down every week, so it'd be like twice the work. The only alternative is, which Zap found amusing, would be for Teal and I to Skype across the apartment complex, which would seem sort of silly. And this makes sense for road shows. Basically, it's a lot more compact than the massive box of gear that Panther has. So
cool. Well, we hope it works well. You people at home can tell us
if this works or not. And if this doesn't go out, then you won't.
Then so, all of you people here will be the only ones who ever hear this. Lucky you.
I'm going to hear the hiss of quality there as I open my Diet Coke.
So you were going to start off with...
I was going to start? Okay.
You were going to start off with... Well, you told me you were going to do something for...
Oh my God, I totally forgot about that.
Did you bring it?
Yeah, I brought it. It's on my phone.
Awesome.
We had like a little... a little icebreaker here, if I can find it. There it is.
I kind of feel like by 11 o'clock at night of on Saturday of a furry convention, we've pretty much broken the ice. I recognize most of the people in the room anyway. So, but to get us sort of warmed up for talking in front of a microphone, we have a little activity that Fuzz has planned for us.
Right. So I have basically on my phone here, I have a Mad Libs app.
Which you warned me about, which I've not prepared for.
Yes. So I'm not going to tell you the title of it.
Okay,
until
fair
we're
enough.
Done. So, person in room.
Ooh, Hux. Hux. Congratulations, you just walked in. You're the first entry in our Mad Libs.
Yay, you win nothing. Noun.
Hat.
Hat, okay.
I'm trying to choose short words that are easy for you to type.
Thank you. I'm getting pretty fast on this little keyboard, though. Okay. Adjective.
Scintillating.
Oh, my God. I've never actually used that in a story. And this doesn't have a spell check. I'm going to butcher that word. Okay. Verb ending in ED.
I think people would...
Yift.
I don't know if I could hold my head up. Iced.
Iced. Okay.
My only plan for Mad Libs was going to be everything was just going to be yiff. It was like person,
some form of
person
yiff.
In room, yiffy McFoxington.
Yiffingly yiffed across the room.
Noun, yiffing, verb, yiffed, adjective, yiffily, you know. But I figure that's kind of too predictable. Also, Cam would kill me.
Yiffalicious, yiffstein.
If Kit didn't kill me first.
He's closer.
I know.
He could take the little hoodie off that
also,
mic.
He knows where I sleep.
I need two plural nouns.
Cats and dogs.
Oh, okay. We're bringing the furry back, yo. Number.
Oh, yeah. 12.
Okay. I won't ask if that's the age when you wrote something for the first time. Never mind.
No, that was the age when I did something else for the first time.
Ooh, that story later in the show. Adjective.
Gay.
Another adjective. Straight.
Gayer.
Gayer. Noun.
Rose.
Rose. Okay. Exclamation. I can't type that.
Cell phone beep. No. Damn.
Do you want to phone a friend? Oh, damn. Okay. I'll add the exclamation point, too. Noun.
Another noun. Kit, give me a noun. Water.
Water. Okay. How much more do we have? Jesus, this is a long one. Sorry. Another person in room.
Oh, geez. Who else is in the room that I know? Sigh.
Okay, sigh. Two nouns. Sorry, I had no idea how long this one was going to be when I started.
Two singular nouns?
Yes.
Why don't we get the audience in on some of these?
Yeah, that's actually a good idea.
All right. Who wants start on the left and just
Kyle
go,
wants to
go across
friend.
The room. Give one singular noun, and then we'll get the next one from the next person.
Okay.
Singular
wood.
Noun. What?
Wood.
That's wood.
Wood. Another noun.
Otter.
Otter. A number.
13.
13. Noun.
Caramel.
Camel
nice.
Or caramel?
Caramel.
Caramel, okay. Another noun.
Duck.
Doctor.
Duck.
Duck. I'm sorry, I'm such a who fag. I'm like, doctor.
Doctor, somebody finally said it.
Yay. Okay, this is the last one. Noun.
Horse.
Horse. Or was that horse?
Of course.
No. Okay, make my droid lib.
Okay, here
okay.
we go.
Basketball playoffs is the title.
Wow. KG2 represent. Hey, if you don't have a this is not going to be useful to the people listening to the recording, but if you have a baller name and you want a baller name badge, Midi in the Artist Alley is doing these awesome baller name badges.
I should get one.
You should.
Since I have a baller name now.
What is your baller name?
My baller name is Z-Pod.
Awesome.
Which I think definitely works. Okay, so I have to like put on like my fake announcer voice now. So, hi, no. This is Hux speaking to you from the broadcasting hat at the Scintillating Forum. In case you iced in late, the score between the Los Angeles Cats and the Boston Dogs is a squeaker, 141-12. This has been the most gay game the. These gayer eyes have seen in years. First one team scores a rose, then damn. Oh, what's funny is I added the exclamation point and there's already one built in, so it's actually damn.
Damn.
The other team comes right back. Okay, timeout is over. Los Angeles brings in the ball at midwater. Sai dribbles down the wood, fakes the defender out of his otter, and shoots a 13-handed shot. It goes right through the caramel. He beat the duck. The game's is over just as the horse goes off.
Wow.
Save. You could figure out what the horse goes off means on your own.
I think we're going to have B-Hop use faked him out of his otter in one of his FBA podcasts now.
That's a good expression.
He will like it. I think I'm glad KM is not here.
And I'm glad you reminded me about that, because I was in such a rush to set up the equipment and everything that
I figured,
completely forgot.
I figured the ice was pretty well broken,
but
still felt like a fun activity anyway.
Yeah, we're going to start doing that on Notcast on a semi-regular basis.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, just have a little fun.
It's actually fun with the audience, too.
Yeah. Audience participation.
We should, that's a droid app. I should grab that for some
of our
live
shows. It's called Droid Libs.
Okay.
Fairly right. Obvious title, I suppose, but yeah. Spring that
cool.
On KM on the next Unsheathed episode.
What's going on?
Hit the soundboard button.
No, see, I'll have to write my own.
Yeah.
More of like adult story Mad Libs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
the otter took off his wood.
It was detachable.
Yes.
Just sort of unscrewed. Like a microphone stand.
Ow.
This is becoming disturbing.
That's the androgynous
this.
Robot otter.
Yes. Would you like some oral sex? Yes, no. Confirm, yes, no.
Is that a Dalek voice?
No, it's not. It's,
okay. Okay.
Although I can like go back when I edit this and add a Dalek voice if you want.
Can you make a Dalek voice say, "Would you like oral sex?"
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I had Teal just whipped out. What's funny about Hoofers is As profane as I am, I've only ever had to bleep Rikoshi and Teal. I've never had to bleep myself. But we're doing Dalek voices, and Teal just goes, "Would you like a hand job?" I put the effect on there, but I did bleep out hand job for our PG podcast.
There's got to be something you can do with something phthalate with the Daleks.
Phthalate.
Yeah.
Well, they've done ejaculate.
There we go. I think Kit has only had to bleep me out once, and that was when I... Twice? I know one time was when we were doing the story challenge, and I inadvertently said on the air how many words each of our story was. Each was.
Okay, three times.
Did I cuss?
You did a racial slur once.
Oh, I did. I didn't mean to. It wasn't a racial slur if they were listening. It was only a racial slur if they were there.
they were there, actually.
No, I mean...
Podcast logic?
I'm not going to repeat it here.
No.
You know, if it was during our live show, if you know the episode, then you can figure it out.
That's how I'm going to have to think back after all the live shows. I think the only one I missed was RCFM.
Yes, RMFC.
RMFC. Damn, those cons and their stupid near-identical acronyms.
Like it's not like it's just like MFF or MFM or something where it's you know, a bunch of Fs with another letter and they're all the same.
Yeah, it's like a da-da-da-da-da-da.
It's like, seriously, RMFC, RCFM, how do you have two cons with those same four letters?
One year, they're on the same weekend.
I know.
It's like Memorial Day weekend a couple years ago. It's like, bizarre.
Seriously.
So, do we want to go into Gray Muzzle Cast? Because we kind of joked about...
We could.
Doing Gray Muzzle Cast. We're already there. We're
already complaining about the fandom and the damn kids with their RCMFs and their Rocket City fur cons.
Back in my day, con initials were only two initials to a con, AC and FC. That was it.
Back in my day, there was only one con, and that was CF, and everybody knew what you meant. Don't go beyond that.
No, I can't, because then it would just be like one letter that would make no sense.
right.
But no, actually, you're right, though. When I first got into the fandom, I mentioned this earlier, there was like three conventions. CF had just shut down, so there was FC, AC, and MFM, and MFM was like the only smallish.
MFM or MFF?
MFM, Method Fermi.
Okay.
It was the only smallish localish con. Yeah, it started in 97.
Because MFF split off from DuckCon when DuckCon said, there's too many furries coming to our con to do the furry track, so we're not going to have a furry track anymore. And so all the furries said, okay, we're going to have our own con. And
2,000 people and 10 years later.
Yeah, really.
We showed them.
Yeah, I don't know what DuckCon draws, but it's not 2,000 people.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No.
Oh, that's funny.
Clearly, no. It's in the hundreds, maybe.
Wow. And FurFest is doing so much better.
And this is one of the things, and I'm going to bore people by talking about this, but the furry fandom is growing so much. And, you know, we joke. Like, when I got into the fandom, there was conference. And it was once a year, and it was in Southern California in January. So everybody loved to go because, you know, especially if you're in pretty much anywhere else in the country in January, Southern California is awesome.
Yeah.
Then people tried to make a conference east, and that kind of didn't work because there were personality clashes. And then they made an Albany Anthrocon, and that kind of worked except for the fact that it was in Albany. So they moved it to Philadelphia, which became Anthrocon. And conference moved from its January spot to April. And the first year that they did that, it was in a hotel that was like an outdoor complex, and it rained the whole weekend. So you had to walk from outdoor buildings to get from your hotel room to the convention space. And the art show was in a separate building, and it was under a big tent. So the humidity was getting in, and it was just horrible. And Further Confusion said, hey, people love coming to California in January. Let's have a con in January, since conference doesn't want it. And that's how they started being around Martin Luther King weekend.
Which works out very well for people like me to have day jobs in addition to their furry activities.
Right.
You know, having it on a holiday weekend works very well. That reminded me of one of the very one of the early FWAs was at this, you guys on staff could create, it was like a Holiday Inn by the airport. And I remember it because it was...
They were all nodding.
Yeah, it was in February. And that year it was like balls cold. And it was boiling hot in the building. And it was freezing cold outside. So I would just get this like rush of cold air whenever I went back to my room. And because like all the room doors were... It was one of those weird ones where the doors are more like a motel.
Right,
like,
right.
Kevin Smith says, the difference is you with a motel, you pull up to the door with the prostitute and you just get right into the room. Hotels have a lobby.
Right.
You'd think it'd be the other way around, a hotel. But yeah, yeah, that was one of my early FWA experiences.
Oh, I got to say, the weather this weekend has been amazing.
Oh, yeah. It was so nice.
We, and, you know, this is my first FWA and I'm having a great time. I know the con staff didn't have anything to do with the weather, but everything they did have something to do with has been as good as the weather's been. So we're very excited to be here and very pleased.
We paid really good money for this weather.
They stole. Runner.
I said we paid really good money for this weather.
That was Hux, the basketball announcer.
They stole Cobra Commander's weather converter.
Nice. Yeah, we used to I go to MFF and we used to joke that we don't understand why they import their weather from Canada just because it's cheaper. They should buy American, damn it.
I was disappointed in the weather the first time I went to MFF because I was living in the South and it's in Chicago in November and I was like, I could finally see some snow because I hadn't seen it since I lived in Connecticut, and I got out there and I'm like, there's no snow here.
No, it's just freaking cold and then it rains.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. No, the snow doesn't kick in the Midwest till like after Thanksgiving probably. Usually. I had a friend who lived in Minneapolis in like 91. Back in 91, 20 years ago. 20 years ago on Halloween. City of Minneapolis got a 3 feet of snow blizzard. That's all. That's
three
the end
feet.
Of my story.
Okay. So, yeah. It was like 3 feet.
36 really? Inches, yeah.
So I know we That's got a lot of I know snow. We got more than that in Connecticut, but then I had to walk up.
Probably not on
both
Halloween.
Ways. Not well, no, I don't know. Well, not 36 inches, but we would have had snow
all right.
about then. Yeah. It was cold, that's what I'm saying.
The other thing, we're talking about the early cons like conference and all. I don't know the numbers offhand, but I don't believe that conference in its biggest year got to the number of attendees that are here at FWA this weekend. I don't know if you – I think you keep up a little better with stats
yeah,
than I do.
Yeah, because great resource for this is Wikifer because they have a timeline link that actually shows it in graph form, like how many attendees each con had over the years. And I think CF had topped 1,000, maybe 1,200.
Right.
But I know last year there was like over 1,500 people here.
Right.
And the con's growing. So
yeah.
That's probably correct. It got pretty close but not quite. And certainly not to the level that you know, Anthrocon and FC have hit since.
Right. And MFF, as we said, 2000. But,
yeah.
But this is it's kind of cool because this is a big con by, you know, FurryCon standards even. And it doesn't have a kind of crowded feel of it. When I say it doesn't feel like a big con, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, the dealer's room isn't packed. There's not people jamming the hallways and making it impossible to move. There's just a ton of people here, but they're all finding places to go and things to do. And it feels like a nice small con.
Yeah, yeah. Still maintain the small con feel. I think the hotel helps this year because the con's on two levels.
Yeah,
as opposed
to
one. It's sort of
cool.
Like
I kind of like the hotel actually.
Yeah, it's a bit of a maze, but. I'm
like
getting
that.
Used to it. And I will just be used to it. You know, hopefully it won't move again.
Yeah.
I'll be like, yay, I know where everything we're moving again. Damn.
See, I like puzzles like that because I like, you know, man, it's difficult to get from here to here. But I figured it out. And now I know the little secret passages and all that and how to get up to the restaurant from the panel rooms and how to get back down. And, you know.
I'm fat and I was carrying things.
Yeah.
I did not have the same appreciation for the maze-like. Especially from the hotel self-parking garage to just to the lobby. Because there's not an elevator that will lead you out of the parking garage to the lobby. And I'm pushing this rickety little cart I've got that's loaded up. And I'm following the little lines on the ramp, which is kind of steep. It says two hotel, and I'm like, whoa.
Oh, jeez.
And there's speed bumps that you have to go over.
And you lost your assistant at the last minute. Like,
yeah.
The only guy you've got behind your table is some writer who's too important to help you move stuff.
Occasionally, your assistant will help, like, just brush the dust off your shoulders.
Yes. he's not rated to move anything heavier than that. He's in the Wolf Union.
Why aren't I in the Wolf Union?
Because you live in Texas.
Oh. I don't know which answer I like or hate more, actually. Right, Texas is a very Republican state.
Do they allow unions in Texas, even?
You know, I think, yeah, we do, because the DART, the Dallas Area Rapid Transit, their workers are unionized. So, and that's at least just one example I can think of.
So what else, I mean, from the time you came into the fandom, what else is big changes?
Oof.
I mean, we're talking 10, 15 years now, right?
Right. So I came into I guess just for full disclosure, I came into the fandom in 98. 98. Roughly when did you get into it, I think?
This will be my 20th year in fandom. 91 is sort of my official start date.
Wow.
That was when I went full time.
That's almost like, I mean, I know the origins of the fandom are much older than that, but as far as like the really organized convention grading fandom, that's pretty much the beginning, right around the early 90s.
I went to my first convention in 93.
Yeah.
That was Conference 4. And even Conference back in the day did not stay in the same hotel for more than, I think they were 3 years at the Atrium Marquis, mm-hmm. and then they were 2 years at the horrible Knott's Berry Farm Hotel, and then there was the disastrous outdoor hotel by San Diego. And then after that, there were different conventions to go to.
Yeah, with me is like the number of conventions has just exploded.
Yeah,
it would be a huge difference. the quality of course from, you know, as our audience probably knows, I own Four Planet, and so I'm noticing this. But the quality of the publications that's available has really risen. It's like the old fanzines had very good content. But they were all basically made at home, you know, staple.
Or Kinko's, yeah.
Or Kinko's, staple bound or spiral bound with, you know, electrical tape, things like that. And
by the way, Kinko's is going to become a gray muzzle thing pretty soon, too, because they're now all just FedEx Office. So
yeah, I heard about that. It kind of sucks. But, you know, you look at it now, we have, like, proper bound books. You know, you have hardback books, you know, as you well know.
I do.
But the greater variety as well. Also, the number of in art, you know, the advent of digital artwork.
Yeah.
You know, it's.
I remember when digital art was basically Wookiee.
Yeah, there was like one or two people in the fandom that could really do digital artwork, and nowadays it's like, you know, 12-year-olds get a Wacom tablet.
Yeah,
and
there are people that do it well enough that it's hard to tell whether they're doing it digitally mm-hmm. or traditional or a combination. There's people that will draw sort of the base digitally and ink it and then do all the coloring.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, they'll do the base traditional and then they'll scan it and do the rest digitally.
Werepuppy's cover for Resisting Arrest is digital paint. And
over traditional?
Over, I think, traditional sketched media. Yeah. But, I'd swear he painted it. Yeah. And if he had, it would have taken like 10 times as long waiting for it to dry and getting it just right and everything like that. But it just looks so damn good.
Yeah. And I think one of the cool things about the furry fandom is all of these things that we're talking about are advances that are available to everybody in the world. And the furry fandom is just so eager to embrace new technology, new things, new directions, mm-hmm. because they've got this creativity. And it's like, you know, we want to have good books. And as soon as there's a technology available that lets us make these books, we're going to do it. We want to create great pictures. And even before that was possible, people were just like pushing Photoshop to the limit to try to create, you know, great furry art.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of finally caught up to the talent of the people that are using it, which is cool. Timothy Albee with his short film,
mm-hmm.
You know, he did that by himself in 6 months.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm kind of just waiting for the film world technology to catch up to the mm-hmm. the people in furry that want to make short films.
Yeah, and I know quite a few furries that are into either animation or short films of some kind, and it would be that's one media that we haven't really fully explored. That it would be kind of nice to see us hit on. There's some like usually sex-based flash animations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see a longer work or.
Well, you know, have you seen the site Extra Normal?
No, I haven't.
So I was introduced to it because there's basically what Extra Normal is. It's a place where you input a script and some kind of basic character directions, and they have these stock characters and animations and voices, and basically they'll make a little movie with your characters, and it's really, really crudely done, but they can be really funny. So people write these amazing scripts, and I was introduced to it because someone has the so you want to write a novel, and it's the character saying, you know, I'm going to write a best-selling novel. Do you think I should just take it around to the agents now, or should I wait till I'm finished with it? And the other person says, you know, I wish I could kill you and get away with it. And that's kind of the thing. If you look up So You Want to Write a Novel on YouTube, you'll find it. But basically, it allows people with just the script and direction to create this little short movie. And I'm thinking, you know, how long is it before the models get more complicated and more real, and before you get more character directions, and essentially you're writing like an HTML page that something translates into a movie?
That's pretty cool. I mean, even in a very rough form, that could be like, I mean, almost like a digital storyboard.
You know,
it'd be a good rough for an animation or something like that.
Yeah, I messed around with it for like an hour and created something that was crappy. But you know, if you spend a little more time on it, people are obviously making these great little things. It's really cute. It's Extra Normal with no E at the beginning, so it's just xtranormal.com if you're interested in checking it out.
I should make a note of that, and I'll check it out.
I'll take a look.
Write some yaff yaff. Which I don't know is possible.
I don't think they have that camera direction in there yet.
Oh, it'll only be a matter of time before some furry writes a script.
That's XX Extra Normal.
Or Extra Abnormal in that case.
Mm.
What other big changes have you seen?
The conventions keep getting more interesting. You know, when early on in conference, you'd go to conference, there'd be they kind of took their route in like the old science fiction conventions. So there'd be an art show, there'd be a panel. The artist's alleys kind of started to come around conference, I think, 5 or 6, probably a little earlier than that, but that's when they started becoming bigger. And oh, geez, did you ever go to the Furla dance, or did you hear about that?
No,
that was the
I heard about
that. That was
this.
The big thing at the early conferences. There was the adult cabaret, which was the Furla dance, which I never actually went to. That was the big thing, that because science fiction conventions have a masquerade because they have cosplays and all that, so you'd have furry costumes, and those were even in their infancy then, not that way, but
right.
But we had conference had a cabaret, a Furla dance, which was like an adult burlesque show for furries.
A Furlesque
show.
Did
you ever go?
I did indeed.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about?
What did
no
you see?
No is okay.
It's much like a burlesque where there would be people up there belly dancing, taking off clothing. There's actually an auction part of it. Where you could
write the
bid
pet auction.
The pet auction where you could bid upon pets that you could take back and have them clean windows and other manual tasks.
It was funny because I always had the impression from the way they talked about it that it was like, ooh, really adult cabaret show, and pet auction where you can buy pets to do whatever you want. But actually, the adult aspects of the pet auction, at least, were discouraged, and I think they were not actually allowed to claim any...
Sure, let's go with that story.
All right.
The Me furry cover story.
But, you know, the conventions now have just such a range of activities. Like, basically anything people can imagine is being done at conventions. Fursuits, obviously. There's, I think, more fursuits at this convention this weekend than existed in the entire history of Conference.
Yeah, probably so.
And
judging by the length of the fursuit parade through the dealer's room is quite impressive.
It was impressive. The Matthew Ebel concert.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was and other.
Sub-Level 3, Bucktown
Sub-Level 3,
Tiger.
Bucktown. Yeah, the musical concerts have really come into the fandom.
Which you wouldn't really think of as a furry thing, but it works. And we've kind of embraced, like, just anything produced by members of the fandom is kind of, whether it's directly furry or not, it's kind of supporting other members of our community, which I think is pretty cool.
Games, tournaments, video games. Furries embraced playing poker. Furries are creating their own games. Ferroticon is here. And
Shard, the RPG game, came out at AC a couple years ago.
Ironclaw games are real big. And there's just all these things. It's funny because Conference was when it was once a year, it was a diversion. It was a thing like, hey, once a year I get to go to a party and hang out with people who like the same things I like. And the conventions now furry's really grown up into a community, kind of a world. And instead of saying, well, nobody's really doing music at furry conventions, so I'm just, that's just a thing that doesn't happen in the furry world. People now say, I want music at furry conventions. I want music to be furry and be part of my world. And, I want that to be something I can relate to. And they make it happen.
Yeah.
And we're really becoming – and the more diverse activities come into the fandom, the more people are attracted to it. There's people that are only in the fandom to do fursuiting. That's all they do. There are people who are in the fandom because of the artwork. There are artists who are not furry, but they love to come to the conventions because they love to draw furry stuff and they love to interact with people. And all these people are part of the community.
Yeah. I think it's a really great thing. That's one of the favorite parts of it for me is the sense of community.
Yeah. Do you want to...
I'm just curious, like, how many people in the audience, like, what your average, like, length of time in the community is. Like, 10-plus years, show of hands? A couple less than that?
Kit wants to let people ask some questions, so.
That'll work, too. About this or anything else?
Well, anyway, let's finish up with yours. So, there were a couple. Was anyone here more than 10 years? More than five?
Little more.
Most of the people in the room. More than two?
Brand new?
Basically.
All right. Well, welcome.
I'm working on my third year.
Yay. Is there anyone here where this is their first convention? Wow. Cool.
Nice.
More than a third of the room.
It's been rather shell-shocking, to be honest.
Oh. We got to hear this.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your experience in the first convention.
It's been rather shell-shocking. When I came down on, was it Friday morning?
Identify yourself to whatever extent you want
if you want to.
Okay, I go by Cage Bear. I'm not really that well-known. I'm still new to this, but I came
when
down
famous
on...
Famous people will be able to download this podcast, and they'll be like, oh, that was when he was a total noob.
Yeah, I'm hoping. No, but I came down on Friday, and I wasn't really expecting it. I hear all the things, like I listen to Notcast and the Unsheathed, and I hear all the things about the furry fandom, and you just don't know until you're actually here, and you see it for your own two eyes, and it's just like, oh my gosh. And then I went to the first Congoer panel, and it was nice just to know that there's like 30 other people who are feeling the exact same way I am. And that was just a great way to break the ice. And after that, it was going to the Dealer's Den, Artist Alley, and just walking up and just talking to somebody. It's nice just to let go and actually be a furry for once. Because from where I live at, I'm in a rural South Georgia town. Mm-hmm. Being furry is a no-no, much less being gay in the first place. So it's kind of like, I can actually just be myself for once. And that was just really great. It's just been really fun to do that all weekend, and I'm really not looking forward to going back.
Well, so, the good news is they do this every year.
The hard part is getting the money to get here. That yeah. nice black hole that for money called college is yep. kind of hard to pay for. So it's been really fun. I'm glad I got the chance to come here. It's been a long and rocky road to get here, and I'm glad I got here.
Well, cool. Welcome. So, we're very glad that you're here, too. That's really cool.
Yeah, I'm glad we have a first-time congoer in the audience. It's good to get your perspective on this after hearing so much about the community online through various sources. Like, I'm trying to remember my first con experience.
I just kind of want to say that, as I said, I've been in the fandom for 20 years. I tried to count the number of conventions I went to once, and I gave up. it's probably on the other side of 50, I'd say. 40? Kit's looking skeptical. I'm just going to throw out numbers until you say that sounds reasonable. Yeah. 20?
Oh, definitely over 20.
Over 20 furry cons. Okay.
Because I've actually been keeping track. Like, I keep a running tally on my live journal, just not for like bragging rights or anything, just like this is where my memory hole is. And it was, I'm between 40 and 50. Right now, I think.
I went to 10 conferences. I've been to every FC, so that's about, 12 of those. I've been to every MFF, so that's 11 of those, I think. So that's 33 right there. I know. I'm a huge fur fag. The point being, I've been to maybe in the vicinity of 50 fur cons, and I still, when I walk into a lobby for the first time, because you always go through the real world to get there, and I still get that walking into the lobby for the first time going, oh, I'm at a fur con. Okay. All right. I'm here now.
I sort of like when I first arrive at a fur con, it's sort of a novel experience because usually I've flown in or something, so I'm wearing like a polo shirt and jeans, and I'm in my normie gear, I guess. Yeah. And I'm walking around, and I'm like, I could just observe for a couple of hours before I go upstairs and throw my badges on and stuff like that.
Yep.
Kind of a neat experience. Just, and as soon as you walk to the lobby and you're seeing ears and tails everywhere, it's like, yeah, I'm home.
And this was a fun con for me and Kit, because we're used to going to all the West Coast cons. So as I said, we go to FC all the time. We've been to Rainforest the last couple years, and so we're used to walking into a lobby and we're like, hey, it's full of furries. I know that guy, I know that guy, I know that, I know her, I know him, I know him, I know her. And I'm just kidding, there's never any women in the lobby. No. But we walked into this one and we're like, hey, it's full of furries. Wow. There's a lot of furries out there. And then, of course, because that's the way life is, like, what, it was 10 minutes till somebody walked in that knew us? 30 seconds. Yeah. And we walked in and one's like, oh, hey, Kit and Kyle. We're like, oh, hi. We do know someone here.
Yeah. There's always a few maniacs like me that end up going to, like, 10 cons a year.
Yes.
See you no matter where you are.
Yeah, we don't do that many, but we do with Comic Cons. We do that many.
It adds There's up.
People asking questions.
Hey, this is Sai, and first I want to say I've been to 3 conventions, and my first one I've only gone to FWA. My first one, I remember walking in, and like the first thing I experienced was it felt like all the hay in the world disappeared. It was just such an amazing feeling to walk into a crowd like this. And my question for you, as you know, as gray muzzles, if you and this is for both of you, if you had this technology when you first joined the community, do you think that you would have been able to produce your novels sooner? Would you have had more out, or what?
That's a, you know, from the purely technological, the printing perspective, with print on demand technology that didn't exist back when I first got into fandom, it's a heck of a lot easier now to put out a wider variety of material into publication. And back then it was probably a lot harder and a lot more expensive if you were going to put out like an actual book. Like, I guess like Paul Kidd's probably like the only fandom author I can think of that was putting books out in the 90s.
Yeah. Paul Kidd was doing it, so I'm sure it was doable. I was not really writing as regularly then as I am now, so I kind of started at the right time to get in on get in with the bubble of technology. So I don't think it would have made a difference to me, but then again, it might have, because if the technology was there, if the range of books in the fandom was there, that is there now, that is here now, had been there when I went to my first couple conventions, I might have been more inspired to do writing earlier.
I was thinking that it would be very encouraging to see that, because as a writer, it's like, and I love the furry art, but when I first got into the fandom, the art is like way more appreciated than the writing is. And I feel that in the last, you know, 5 years or so, it's starting to kind of, the dynamic of that is starting to change. So yeah, if there was like dealer tables full of books, you know, back in the day, it would have been,
because I love
quite a kickstart.
I love books. I always have. And it was, so that's another kind of example of, it feels like the same thing. You know, you come in and you can finally be yourself. And I was like, well, I want to write, but I want to write about these characters, but nobody in the science fiction world really writes about these characters. They write about, you know, alien cat people, or just like rabbits doing rabbit stuff. But, you know, how do I write these stories with these characters that I like? And there was nobody doing that. So that might have had an effect.
Anyone else? We have a question.
This is Icy Wolf. We were having a discussion the other day, and we were kind of wondering, what is the age that you're considered a gray muzzle, I guess? I mean, that's probably, it's a gray area, and, you know. No pun intended. But, yeah, I mean, I guess what's your take on it?
Kame Hirasaki knows all about this, doesn't he?
we were at
MFF.
RMFC last year. And I'm pretty sure it was RMFC, wasn't it? Was it Midwest?
Yeah, it was in their con book.
All right. So we were at Midwest. This, you know, when you get to be a gray muzzle, you start forgetting things. and they said there was a gray muzzle panel. Any furs over 30 were welcome to come and share their reminiscence. And KM was quite incensed at that.
It was like a month after his birthday or something like
that. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. He was like, I am not a gray muzzle.
And a couple weeks after that, or a couple months after, he was in a conversation with someone. I can't remember if he said this was on IRC or if this was in person. And the guy was like, yeah, so a gray muzzle, that's like 25, right? It was just like, jaws dropping everywhere.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things is the fandom's gotten younger too, and yeah, there are probably all kinds of reasons for that. There's, you know, video games, you know, the internet. These kids these days are getting all over the internets and, you know, talking to their friends and finding out about the furs and
get off my Usenet.
My personal view is I think the a gray muzzle is not necessarily an age thing. I think it's kind of a length of tenure in the fandom thing, where if you're getting to the point where you say, I remember when Uncle Kage was just Kage, and I remember when Two wasn't a ranting griffin, and
it when he had hair.
Yeah, well, nobody remembers that.
Well, I thought I was like going across the line there, and then you were like, oh, fuck that.
Oh, yeah. No. Right over it. He's never going to listen to this anyway. Two is a great person, and, you know, we wish him all, we wish him well, but
he's never going to listen.
He's never going to listen to this. Yeah, so we're good.
We have a
question in the back.
Runner.
So while our runner's going over there. Anyway, I feel like if you've had a length of time in the fandom that you're looking back and you're able to see these changes going on. So I think it's not necessarily if you're 30, if you're 40. I would say if you've been in the fandom like 10 years, you qualify.
This is Kiyo Mizuki. I just wanted to know how you got introduced into the fandom.
It's really funny because that question came up like maybe once a year for a while, and I've been asked it three times at this convention this weekend. And most of the times in front of a microphone, too.
It's because you haven't been here before, maybe.
Yeah,
this
I don't know.
Crowd in general doesn't know your story.
One of the things I will answer the question. One of the things, there's a ton of people, and this is just like in the last year or so, who are real interested in the history of the furry fandom. And they want to know, like, where did this all come from? Where did it start? How has it changed? And I've heard about, I think, two separate people who are writing books on it and interviewing people. I've done two interviews at this convention about different aspects of the furry fandom, not necessarily the history, but that kind of came into it. People are starting to really be interested in it as its own thing. It's no longer just... Like, I don't think anybody asks, you know, how did the Star Trek fandom come into being? It's not like, well, you know, Gene Roddenberry had an idea, and 2 years later, there were Star Trek fans. But
yeah, well, we don't have that nexus point of a show or a book or a movie,
right.
Or one in particular.
And I know there was a whole wave of people that came into the fandom from The Lion King. I think there's a more recent wave of people that come into the fandom, or sort of not a wave, but like a steady trickle that come in from like Pokemon and Digimon. Mm-hmm. And
I talked to someone earlier today who was Balto.
Furomon or whatever. Balto. Balto's a good one, actually.
Yeah.
I came in
like Tailspin. Maybe.
I came in through the TV, the Warner Brothers cartoon resuscitation of Tiny Toons, Animaniacs. I was a fan of those shows, and that was right when Usenet was happening. So I was able to get on Usenet and talk to other fans of those shows. And one of those fans said, hey, if you like these shows, you should log on to FurryMuck. And I did not run screaming when the first person I met asked if I wanted to come over and see his knife collection.
Sounds a lot like some of my first experiences on the brief time I was on a muck, when someone like lured me back to their wherever, and I was like, oh, we're going to make out, and then he stabbed me.
Wow.
I was like, this isn't fun at all.
No, the first time someone lured me back to their place on Furry Muck, we did make out, so then I was like, oh, okay, maybe this is worth it.
I think this was on IRC. Maybe Furry Muck was more fun. I know for me it was. I'd had an interest in werewolves for like a long, long time, at least since I was like 10 or 11. And when I was in college, and I didn't have a computer or any internet access at home, but I had the computer library at the college, and did a search for werewolves. And I kind of got involved in the were community for a while, but some of the top 10 links were like Wookiee's page, Foxfire's page. I was like, oh, what's this? Oh, I shouldn't be looking at this in the computer lab because I didn't know, you know, what any of it was. And so I started posting the alt horror werewolves and alt fan furry, and it was just kind of all downhill from there.
Oh, yeah. And you haven't really experienced embarrassment until you've opened up a laptop in a coffee shop with an Adam Wan picture as a background and a Windows Explorer problem that causes it to hang when it opens so that the background is the only thing that comes up and you cannot, like, affect the system at all without closing it. That was, yeah. My friend was very mad at me for giving him that computer to work with after that.
Oh, my.
I have a gentleman here. This is also your first con. You can talk a little bit, tell us a little bit about that.
And sure. My name is Kimur. I've been in the fandom for a number of years online, but this is just last year I decided to actually go out and meet furries in real life, shock them, you know, all that. Awesome. And it's been great, but it actually leads to a really interesting question. You know, everybody here has commented about the really positive atmosphere that's been here, how great everybody's been. And I've experienced that myself. I've also experienced it online, not so much. Unfortunately, there's a lot of furry drama online, a lot of furry backbiting, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious as to why there's such a divide between how awesome everybody is at a con and how nasty people can be online.
It all goes back to the great Fox-Wolf War of 1972. No. I think it's just there's a Penny Arcade comic that sums this up really well, and I don't remember the exact thing, but it's like the internet plus anonymity equals douchebaggery. It's so much easier to not when you can insult someone and it's not to their face, and you can be anonymous, and you're not accountable for your actions on the internet, really.
And even if you're not anonymous, if you're just sitting at your computer and, you know, I think we've all had this reaction where somebody says something and your immediate first response is, man, you're a dick. How dare you say that? And there's no, like, if somebody says that and you're talking to them face to face, you're like, that voice is up in here. And then you actually think, if I say, wow, you're a dick to this guy's face, that's not good. But there's nobody to stop you from doing that on the computer.
I mean, I guess I realize that. It just seems like there's, I guess, more of one with furry than there are with other communities. I mean, I've met people online from other communities, and I don't know, maybe it's just me. But it seems like they've developed a more severe reputation for that.
I've heard from other communities, though, that they have their own flavors of drama. And it might partially be the median age of furry is trending down. There's people are younger and younger coming into it, but I've heard there's a lot of this going on anime cons as well, which also has a very young user base. But what was it? A friend of mine has a family member whose parents work in the crafting industry, so they'll make homemade crafts, and apparently there's like real big divides and arguments in that community.
Some people
are making them handmade, but the guy down here is selling them half the price because he's importing them from China. And there's like drama, and you're talking about, you know, 50s and 60 year olds.
There's drama. It's a human thing. I know we're furries, whatever. but there's I'm just thinking of some examples I've come across recently in the photography community. There's drama between people who retouch photographs and people who don't, and people who think retouching is just a form of artwork, and people who say retouching is altering the photograph, and you're bound only to retouch photographs because that's how they did it in the old days. And then people say, well, Ansel Adams retouched landscapes. Like, he would remove things from landscapes that he didn't want in his pictures before he took them. So how is that reflecting? And there's all these dramas back and forth. I had another example which just fell right out of my head.
I'm sure stamp collectors or, well, I mean, I don't know, music.
Stamp collectors don't talk to each other because it's all jealousy. It's all like, you've got that stamp? Damn. And, you know.
Or musicians in the 70s, like when Dylan went electric. It was like this big drama in the folk music community. But I do know what you mean. It's like sometimes I'm shocked by it too. And I've been on the internet a long time now, and I'm just like, oh, there was an example recently that really kind of took me back. There was a fur here in Georgia, and there was a money-raising campaign for him to get some surgery that he needed. And I'd seen an artist post about this journal, and about three-quarters of the comments were positive. They're either,
yes, I want to help, or I can't help, but I wish him the best. And then there was this group of people that was like, well, why the fuck should I care about some random person I don't know? And, oh, we have to save the furries, boo-hoo-hoo. It's like, no, we have to save a fellow human being that you might care about because he's in your community too. Why are you being a dick about this? If you don't want to help, then just don't say anything. But it's the internet.
So. But again, in that case, you know, the proper response is don't say anything to them. Let them just say what they, I mean,
let the trolls just fester away to
themselves. Look at any posting on FA. I mean, and this is kind of, we joke about stuff, but, you know, we'll post things like, hey, you know, I'm doing a sign-in in New York City next weekend. So I'll post something like, hey, I'm going to do a sign-in in New York. Who can show up? And like the first four comments on that are, oh, I wish I could be there. And it's just, you know, it's just people saying, I want to say something. And, you know, that is what it is. And sometimes the things that they want to say don't come out right because they're not thinking about them. And then other people react quickly to that and it just gets worse. But that's not specific to furry, I don't think.
People are people.
Yep.
So you also don't have the emotion factor. It's a whole lot. You can say one thing and mean it differently, but you know, emoticons only go so far.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say something and mean it a totally different way and have it and someone take it a totally different way. That's happened to me tons of times.
That's true.
Yeah, that's been really hard because I'm like, I meant something totally different, but the way I said it to them is totally different.
Yeah.
That's why you'll see people who've been burned by that a couple times say things like, you know, here's my statement. I don't mean it to sound like this. I know as I'm looking back over it, it kind of sounds this way, but I can't think of a better way to phrase it, but I really mean this, and you know, just to completely disambiguate what they're trying to say.
I've had to double, triple talk myself sometimes. Yeah, somebody misinterprets I've done that too. Something. Yeah. I think we have two questions here.
Yeah. Censor Gray Muzzles, has furry fandom drama gotten better or worse since you entered the fandom?
I'd say better. Yeah. Just unequivocally, just better.
This is just the last few years, I've gotten more and more excited about being part of this community, seeing the amazing things that people are doing with it. From, you know, all the stuff we talked about, music, fursuit construction, the books people are putting out. And I've said this over and over again in the last week, but all six novels nominated for Ursa Majors this year are fandom generated. And I believe this is the first year that that's been true. I know that up to 2005 or 6, there were never more than 3 out of the 5 fandom generated. I think last year it might have been 4. It might have been just 3. But I know it's never been, I don't think it's ever been the full slate. And it's definitely never been 6. So that, you know, that's from my personal field of interest, but so much stuff, you know, the games, and we talk about, a lot of this is there's so many more people in here that someone will say, wow, we should have a furry card game. And, you know, a lot of people kind of talk about that and kick it around for a couple of years and someone's finally like, screw it, I'm doing it. And then once somebody does it, then other people are like, well, hell, I like that idea, but, you know, I could do it. I could do it better. I could do it with this spin. I could do an adult furry card game. I could do, you know, a furry battle card game as opposed to – I could do a furry RPG. And people just start seeing – once you see what's possible, people get really excited about it because they see these are my colleagues. These are my peers doing these things. And it's so good for the community. It's so exciting to be a part of here.
Yeah, what he said. No, I mean, I agree. I think it's gotten better. It's just there's, you know, there's more of us. There's more cons. And I like that we have more and more cons and more local cons, but they're not
sucking the life out of the cons that were there before. You know, all the cons are growing and thriving, and there's more and more local communities that are there, people are getting together and doing things. And I just, like we've already said, the advances in like writing and music and the technology to produce things like that. Just, It's nice to be involved in a hobby or an interest where I'm not feeling like I'm getting burned out on it.
Yeah.
Like my enthusiasm for it is just getting more and more as time goes by instead of less.
And a lot of that is from the people in the community. I mean, I talk a lot about the creativity, but just the enthusiasm of the people. Like, you know, Fuzz and I were just like, we don't know what the hell we're going to talk about, but we're going to sit in front of microphones for a couple hours. And we got these people showing up to listen. And that's, you know, that just makes us want to keep doing stuff, you know. I wrote a couple furry books, and people want to come buy them. Fuzz bought a publishing business and is really, you know, has had tons of customers and really turned
people
that
seem
around
to want to buy them. Yeah.
So and that enthusiasm, you know, is really cool. That's I kind of trailed off there, but
no, and it's the same with podcasting. Sorry, well, just a second, but it's like here's this new beast that's come into a new type of media that we can do, and started off with one or two, and maybe every year or two, and now there's like a gazillion at last count. That is a scientific number.
Although there's still no Ursa Major category.
Yeah, if you're listening, Ursa Majors, and I know you're not, but it's just another thing.
Green Reaper's at this con, though. I know he's real active with Ursa Major people. I don't think he's on the committee, but he talks on the forum a lot.
We could poke him.
We will.
Get a category in there. But this is just another new thing that furry has discovered and latched onto. And, you know, there's so many different kinds. And, you know, we have the writing show, relationship show. We have great story shows like Anthro Dreams. We have general news shows like Unfurled and just, you know, chatting shows like Live from the Hop In, and there's like 11 million different furry podcasts. And think that kind of enthusiasm for latching onto something like that and kind of making it ours and giving it a unique twist is really inspiring.
And it's fun. I, that's another great example. KM and I used to sit around and talk about writing all the time, and we were like, hey, we should have a podcast. Nobody'd ever listen to that. And then we heard Notcast, and it was a bunch of people sitting around talking about relationships. And we were like, this is fun. We like listening to this. And we're like, well, you know, we won't be as fun as those guys because, you know, we don't have a famous podcaster. But but we thought, hey, maybe we'll do a few shows. And we've had lots of response and enthusiastic core following. And
2 years later, you're still going strong.
Oh, God, has it been that long?
I think it has, right? It's been 2 years.
Pretty close. 76 shows.
Yep.
And everybody else was kind of like, hey, wait, I've got a microphone and interesting things to say. I can do a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
On to the next question.
Well, this is Dime. Bringing the questions back around to Fur Week in Atlanta related, what was your guys' favorite panel that you guys attended, and name a panel that you would like to have attended but didn't get a chance to?
Well, mine will be brief. because I'm a dealer, I was behind my table for like 90% of the convention. So the only panels I've attended this con are the ones that I'm on. So that's this and the Adult Furry Fiction, which was at 9 tonight. Other ones I would have liked to have gone to, I would have, since this was sort of in our heads already, because we talked about this previously, I would have liked to have gone to the History of the Furry Fandom one that I believe was earlier today.
Oh, that was yesterday.
That was yesterday. Gray Muzzle, I can't remember. there was another one, too, a discussion of furry writing.
Past
then
and present
now.
Furry fiction.
Yeah, that would have been interesting as well. I also missed Matthew Ebel's show, which I had been intending to go to, but I think I was out to dinner at the time.
The schedule, I don't know if you want to look at that.
Sure. I mean, there's always lots of good programming, and I miss a good variety of it.
I got to see a couple songs from the Matthew Ebel concert. I would have liked to have seen more. We ended up coming back from dinner a little bit late and then had to get up to the adult furry fiction panel.
Ooh, body painting. That sounds interesting.
I quite enjoyed the past and present furry fiction panel. I thought that was a really great retrospective.
Not a regretrospective.
I really enjoyed our adult furry fiction panel too.
I think that went really well.
The audience was really into it, and they're into it. And we were honestly surprised when the staff member came in and was like, "Wrap it up."
We looked at our phones and like,
we're like,
oh.
"Wait, why is at 9:30? Oh shit, it's 10 o'clock." So that was a great deal of fun.
Did you miss any that you would have liked to have gone to? I named a couple
like
that
the
I would
Matthew
have.
Ebel show, the history of the furry fandom I missed also. That would have been
oh,
cool.
Oh, you did? Oh, I thought you saw that one.
I blocked it up. We ended up going out to dinner. It was at 7 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
I always like kind of the improv comedy stuff, and I never get to go see them.
As far as not panel specific, but a con event, the Fur Bus was kind of interesting.
The Fur Bus was awesome.
And from what I understand, they're not a furry company. They're a local Atlanta company, and that's just their theme. And it's like, hey, that works.
Yeah.
We'll hire these guys, which I think is cool. They had a horrible furry pun on the side of the bus. I was like, oh,
they had
yeah.
three of them, didn't they? And wasn't it like three things in a row or something?
Oh, I don't remember what it was. Was it conveyance?
I got a picture of the fur bus, so I can pull it up here. Talk about something else
something
for a bit.
Like transportation or something like that.
It was,
that.
Again, the kind of thing where you know, like the first time people think about making furry jokes, they're like, oh, I'll put fur in everything.
Yeah, and which I still do because I haven't grown up.
Well,
so.
Yeah. But you also do it ironically.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's see if I can.
He's zooming in now.
Yeah, so it's unforgettable chauffeured service.
So I actually thought chauffeur was kind of creative. I wouldn't think to do it in French.
So if anyone here did not see the fur bus, I have a picture of it and a picture of the inside, which I posted on my Twitter
account.
Which
is Mad Pimpin.
Which looks horribly surreal, actually. People are like, what the hell is going on in there?
I took this photo from inside a bong.
It's for those of you at home, it's basically it's white fur lined and all lit with red lights, and so it looks
it's what the inside of my head is like.
Yeah. It looks interesting, I'll say that.
Yes. Any other questions or comments from the audience? We got one back here. Oh, back there.
Wait, you are what?
Nothing.
Hi, I'm Rama. I've been in the furry fandom, I think, as long as you now, Fuzz. I think 89 was my first, Ninety-nine was my first convention.
MFM 99 was
MFM
my first con.
99 was my first one, too.
Awesome.
Mm. I've also been staff on for now about a decade on different conventions and tend to be like one of the first ones in and the last ones out. And we were talking earlier about, you know, the clash of kind of, you know, you guys walking in and immediately seeing, you know, going from normal to furry in like one step, while I get to see it kind of start to grow and then at the end start to shrink back. And it's always very depressing for me to kind of walk the halls after we've cleaned up and be like this last people out the door and say, oh my God, you know, 12 hours ago there was a fur pile over there.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it. It was more of a comment more than a question, I guess.
No, I can totally see. And I know it was not one of my stories, but it's an interesting story I read. A friend of mine, Bucktown, had I think it was actually FWA last year, and he had to come back to that hotel for a work-related thing. So he was seeing the same hotel where he'd seen suitors running up and down the halls, and that was the dealer's room over there, except now it was all like very official business conference panels, and I'm sure that's kind of a jarring experience. At least the hotel that hosts Furry Fiesta this weekend is hosting a science fiction convention, so not quite a million miles.
It's just different kind of weirdness.
Yes, yes.
One of the things that always that we always found a little bit jarring with MFF whenever we stayed over to the Monday at the previous hotel, the good one.
The ones with the squares.
The square one with the atrium. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was a great hotel.
Was that a Hyatt?
I think it was a Hyatt.
The Monday after the FurCon was always the first day that they started putting up the Christmas decorations.
Funny story on that one was the first year they were there was they actually put them up the Sunday night. And, well, furries being furries decided, hey, props.
Oh, yeah. There were some reindeer costumes there.
Yeah. They were requested after that to maybe start doing it on Monday after we were done.
So it was always weird to kind of walk around Monday morning, and there were fewer of them there, and there were all these little packages of decorations, and it's like, well, they're waiting for us to go home so that they can put this other thing up, and just sort of a reminder. But, yeah.
Yeah.
End of conventions.
It's also, that's another thing I've heard is people dealing with post-con depression or PCD, as it's called. It's like,
actually, for staffers, it's usually PCR, which is post-con
recovery.
Recovery, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Is there not like post-con nervous breakdown?
It's usually pre-con nervous breakdowns.
The staffers in the audience are all agreeing.
Yes, nodding vehemently.
Do you ever deal with that?
Kind of. It was more when I was living in a climate that actually had a winter. I've since gotten better, and I would go to conference in January, and it would be 70, 80 degrees out and sunny. And then I would have to fly home, and it would be snowing, and it would be 20 degrees or 10 degrees, and it would be windy, and there would be no other furries there, and I would have to, and I didn't really have a local community at that time, and so it was just kind of like, time to get on the internet again.
Yeah. I think I was, I never really got it a lot, but I think I was really fortunate in that I always seemed to have a really pretty active local community.
Oh, that was the other thing I was going to say. When I started going, I mean, there weren't even fur meets, really. Mm-hmm. And we talk about cons. There's probably a con like every other weekend of the year at this point. I mean, I know I'm going to 2 furry cons in the span of a month. I'll have been to 3 in the span of 2 months. And but then even for people not going to cons, there's usually local fur meets. I know you guys on Notcast, people write in and they're like, I'm a lonely furry and there's nobody in my area. I live in a college town. And you're like, there's furries in your area.
Yeah.
Look them up. They're probably meeting at the pizza place right now.
Stop writing an email and get to CC's immediately. Yes. That is where the furries will be.
Oh my God. CC's is the one with the macaroni and cheese pizza.
Yes.
I could not believe that. I saw it on a commercial. It was just like 2 seconds. It was among all their other pizzas. And I had to tweet about it. And I got like 6 responses going, half of them saying, oh yeah, mac and cheese pizza is awesome. And the other half saying, oh my God, that looks wrong. Sorry.
Don't knock.
I don't think we have CC's out in California.
Oh, okay.
At least I don't want to know if we do.
Mm. It's a good cheap place for, you know, especially if a lot of furs are like in college or, you know, you can eat for like, what, $3 or something like that. It's nothing. But
yeah, I think having the local community is a good thing for post-con depression. At least having a community online that you can talk to.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anybody else have anything to talk about? I think we're over an hour, aren't we?
Yeah, we're at 1:20 already.
So
we have a comment.
We do.
I'm very eager.
He is eager. He's running up to the front row. If he wasn't a raccoon, his tail would be wagging.
I wag. Hi, this is Drenth, and I have a question. 2 questions, actually. First one, because in the past, Kit has answered questions when asked directly, Vegas, what is your favorite furry con?
I'm not sure everyone knows about Vegas, but Vegas is a time-honored tradition, and I've met him several times at previous furry cons. He is the nominal Kit and Kyle love child, you might say, and he is incredibly cute and right over on that table looking at us longingly. Second question, Fuzzwolf and Kyle, what is your favorite moment of this furry con?
I do have to say, you did achieve your drunken status before coming to this, didn't you?
Didn't I? You know what? I really did. Sorry.
My favorite moment is watching Kit's hand diligently try to follow your mouth with the microphone. Like, I'm going to record you. It's like he was playing Asteroids. I'll have to think about that for a second. Do you want to answer the Vegas question?
I think Vegas will speak for himself, so hold on a second.
Excellent, yes. Yay. I never thought of Ayn Rand that way.
Yeah, that was pretty good. He's eloquent when he wants to be.
Indeed.
Right.
Favorite moment.
Hmm.
I've had the Jeopardy theme.
The active community would help. I have one person, and I
better than no one.
I know, but
unless
we don't talk.
No.
He has way other interests than I do. So
something making sometime.
I would really like to do that, but again, there's that black hole of college that I keep tossing money at, and I never really get much out of it in return.
You will. It's a long-term thing.
I'm hoping. I spent a long 4 years, and I spent a lot of money on college, and gotten a whole lot of scholarships and other things like that to help pay for it.
I don't know that I have one particular favorite moment, but sort of in general, my favorite moments. Wow, those are some shiny glasses.
He is a raccoon.
He is. He saw something shiny, and he had to put it in his face. I think my favorite part of this convention has been meeting so many new people. Like I talked about coming into the lobby and seeing all these people, and it's a great feeling knowing that walking into the lobby next year, I'll be able to look around and say, hey, I know that person. I know that person. I know that person. Meeting people that I'd corresponded with via email. Hux was one of them. Meeting people who I've seen on Twitter. I'd corresponded with Sai. I talked to him. Rama I've seen on Twitter. Norman I've seen on forums. Putting faces to all these names. There were a couple others. Okatonid Knight on Twitter came up to the table. I forget his name, the guy who was hosting the past and present furry fiction panel, who actually lives in San Francisco, and I had to come to Atlanta to actually meet him and talk to him. We talked a little bit at Further Confusion, and it was just in passing because I was doing 11 panels at Further Confusion, so I had like little 15-minute time chunks to talk to people. But really, it's been the people. That's been my favorite part of this con.
Yeah. It's the people do it, you know, really make a convention, and you know, the staff of a con will always put so much effort into making it happen. But if you go to a con and you don't know anybody there, and you just kind of mope by yourself, and you're not going to have that great a time. So it's all about, you know, meeting people and connecting, and you know, being behind the table all day. I get to talk to a lot of people. Best individual moment, I guess. I actually really enjoyed our adult furry panel that we just did. It's just lot of fun.
Man, you people who weren't there, you missed out. It was awesome.
And we don't record random panels.
I know. You have to come to the panels at these conventions. They're a lot of fun.
Since getting this podcasting bug, I've had the urge to just record every panel that I'm on.
I'm actually a little surprised that Ski Fox isn't here, since he is East Coast and all. He usually records every single panel he attends.
I need to see the video on that.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Tear.
Drenth is doing emo tears now.
It's very
deep. He doesn't look like he means it, Ski Fox.
He's all D colon.
He's being ironic.
No, I miss Ski Fox terribly.
Now he's pretending to care. Anyway, any other questions out there? Anything anybody wants to talk about? Anybody first timer at a convention or long timer at a convention want to say a couple words real quick? We're running up against our time limit, but we have time for a couple more. Two. Kit says two. See, even when he's not producing, he's a producer.
He's our time wolf.
This FWA was my first con. I was just really surprised to see that there were so many different events to choose from and so many people that were just open and accepting and social. I was really surprised. I thought I was going to be the one that was moping the entire time all by myself. But it was nowhere near like that. It was just everything you went to, there was somebody, hey, hi, I'm so-and-so. So I met some really awesome people and attended some really cool events while I was here.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yay. I think I once heard Disneyland or Disney World described as a place where you have to work really hard at not having a good time. And I kind of think if you're a furry that furry cons are kind of that way too. You can have not a good time at a furry con, but it takes some work. I don't know. That's my experience. Anyone else? First timers, long timers?
Hey, this sucks. I'm just curious if there was any panel you would have liked to seen that didn't happen this year or any particular event you would have liked us to do that we didn't?
So the facetious answer is the orgy pile. Drenth can arrange that. See Drenth after the show. No, I actually totally don't mean that. I don't know. Thinking. You know, something that, and I'm biased on this, of course, but I'm suggesting the cons to do more podcasting panels. I'm going to try to get this introduced to Furry Fiesta's track, but FC kind of approached Kyle this year about more podcasts, and they had a podcasting nuts and bolts, which was like the technical aspect of it, and a podcasting content, which is what we would bring to the show.
We sat up here and basically told people how to be interesting for an hour at a time.
And tried really hard to make that interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I think we led it off with me saying, so we have to sit here for an hour and talk. What the hell do we do? Fuzz was like, I don't know. I don't do this.
I just woke up.
But the nuts and bolts one actually was recorded, and Kit is going to have it available. Buck Hopper took over that and did just an amazing job. Like, he had whiteboard diagrams and demonstrations of compression and all this other audio stuff. And one person in the panel said, you know, I've had tons of people try to explain this to me over the years, and I never understood it until this panel. So we need to drag him out.
That'll be up in 2011. Buck Hopper does have a PhD in podcasting.
He does. He is the man. Or the bunny.
That's the only thing I could suggest, and it's because it's a fairly new addition to the furry genre, I guess. But I can't think of any major or necessary thing that you guys missed from looking over the schedule. Of course, I'm a little out of the loop being a dealer and all, so kind of limited on the panels I'm doing. But could you think of any suggestions to make?
I can't really. One of the things Kit and I are doing our tour of different kinds of conventions this month. The older science fiction conventions have a lot of panels, and some of them are instructional, and some of them are more like roundtable kind of panels. And I was kind of thinking, and I know this is sort of more on like me and the content providers to put together, but I was thinking it would be kind of interesting to talk about, have roundtables between people talking about aspects of, you know, using aesthetics in design in furry fiction, or just have artists sit around and talk about using I don't know, different styles and what they represent, and just a little more like theory of what we're doing here. Like the panel that we had, it was kind of uses of the city. And so we didn't actually go to any of the panels, but it was there's a lot of authors basically coming up and saying, oh, well, there's this work which uses, you know, they use the city as kind of a living, breathing thing. This work takes, you know, like China Mieville's Un London, there's my literary reference for the podcast, has what he calls ab cities, which is sort of cities in this alternate world where all the trash from the regular cities goes and it gains a life of its own. And so I think it would be cool. Sorry? No, Rikoshi didn't actually attend, but you would have been a good one for that. I mean, Thousand Leaves is a great city example for that. And so it would be interesting because I think furry fiction is at the point where we could have debates like that, like talk about, you know, how do I use the city in my novels versus Rikoshi in his novels. You know, Fuzzwolf, your settings for Trevor's Tricks very much are part of the stories. And much as you may not think that they're worth discussing from a literary angle, I do think that they are, and that you could talk about
that.
You could talk about the things that you built up. So I don't know, that's just kind of, I'm not quite sure how to go about that, and so that's just kind of the off the top of my head thing. But no, everything else, there was more than I expected. So. Well done.
So we're at about the 90-minute mark here before editing, so we'll probably call that a show now. I think we've had a really good discussion here.
Glad we had fun. Hope you guys had fun. Yay.
Yay. So on that note,
thank you guys all for coming. Sorry.
Oh, no.
And thanks to FWA for letting us have the space and the facilities and for getting our extension cord.
Yeah, I was going to say thank you, Rama, for running and getting the extension cord. Thank you, Kit, for being our runner wolf and getting the audience questions.
Yep. Careful, Kit will get used to that applause.
So,
I'm Kyle.
I'm Fuzz. I was thinking, keep writing and
keep writing. Oh, and big balls.